Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've got new efforts here, and we're looking west towards sunshine here and another beautiful sunset over Camden Yards. Don Moeller joins us now. We have decided to, after 2 years of Baltimore Positive and probably only doing a segment or two, and Don was a frequent contributor when he was working at Baltimore County for all these years as a sports guy and my foil in Section 513 and Ravens games. But we have decided to each and every week get together. And, you know, Dan Roderick used to call these gripe sessions. But Don has come up with a clever new name with thanks to Fronda, I think. And we're going to brand this segment. Is that correct?
Absolutely. As you said, thanks to our good friend, Fronda Cohen, one of the brightest minds in communications throughout the region. I told Fronda what we were thinking about doing, that we were just going to take a quick look back, talk about present day, a quick look forward, get some stuff off our chest. I said, "What would be a good name?" And of course, in a matter of seconds, she said, "I like calling it the Recon." I said, "Boom, there it is. I ran it by you." So once a week, we're going to embark upon the Recon and try to get some things off our chest, take a look at what's going on out there in the world. And first of all, how was your weekend?
Well, you know, I'm doing a lot of moving in my life and cleaning and obviously rescreening, and Baltimore Positive is on my mind 24 hours a day. And now that sports and football sort of over from on the field, I am focusing more on shot, pandemic, what happens when this is over with. What it's been a year, right? And I think the thing that's hitting me is in the last year, you know, you've had interactions with your grandchildren and your children. You've got your place on Eastern Shore, but you haven't had a meal in Paris. You know what I mean? The things that were like the things that you would save up and say, man, we're going to do that next year. We're going to go on this cruise. We're going to do a family reunion. We're going to go to a Super Bowl. We're going to go on that Vegas trip. We're going to do that. Whatever that thing is, that there's been a year for me where I haven't had that thing. And I guess that's getting a little heavier. My wife just put together a little thing for herself. She's doing a little yoga retreat outdoors, spending some time with her mom. She hadn't seen her mom in a year and a half down in Florida. So I think for me, with the weather being cold and sort of cocooned, in my real mind, I'm thinking, what are the things over the next year that are going to be the thing I circle in my calendar, the way I used to circle five nights a week in my life, because there was an Oreo game on Tuesday and a concert on Wednesday and a special event on Thursday and a charity function on Friday and something I was going to do, you know, eat dinner on Saturday with friends. All that's gone, and it's all gone from the calendar. And I guess that's where my mind is right now, thinking about, you know, fresh start, the next thing, life after pandemic. As much as you talked about life after 9/11 20 years ago, I'm starting to look at that a little bit. And I think in a lot of cases, a lot of our lives have changed, and maybe even our tastes have changed a little bit.
Well, I think that's spot on, Nestor. And it's interesting that you mentioned where you are, how you feel, the desire to reconnect again. There's no doubt that, you know, Linda and I, and we've talked about it, feel pretty blessed that although we've been hunkered down like everyone else, you know, our children and grandchildren, you know, live in the neighborhood. So we have been able on a limited basis to see them. We mask up, they come over, you know, but we
did cancel. By the way, I haven't caught this damn thing that I know of, maybe a year ago, but I keep thinking to myself, if you catch this, not only for someone your age and now you got your shot and whatever, but like how disruptive the illness would be if I got it, you know, like 2 weeks feeling awful, nothing getting done. At this point, knock on wood, right? Just the fact that I haven't gotten it's a blessing, right?
Well, you know, a young man who used to work for me now works in New York City, just a brutal reminder. I mean, he's been very careful, has a young child, but a brutal reminder of how dangerous this thing is. His wife's a nurse. I mean, I'm sorry, wife's a doctor at one of the big hospitals in New York. So they've been living this thing now for over a year. And he just caught coronavirus, and I didn't realize it in checking up on him. In New York, when you get it, they move you into specialized hotels. So he's actually had to move out of his home and move in to be isolated away from everybody. So everybody addresses it a little bit differently. Those that follow me on social media know that Both Linda and I were fortunate enough just recently to get our second shots. There is a benefit to being a certain age. And again, to all of those who are waiting and frustrated and rightfully frustrated at waiting to get vaccinated because the vaccine just isn't flowing yet. And nobody, we spoke to Dr. Gregory Branch last week. No one more frustrated than him. I've spoken to County Executive Olszewski. They've created this really world-class system to get shots in people's arms out there at Timonium. And they just need vaccine. Last week, I think they got none.
Well, Don, you're a big fan of government, and you like to come on. You play the PR role, and I play the tough guy role here. But this has been an absolute cluster F of government over the last 12 months, of how to not do government. The way Trump treated this, the way firing, you know, the World Health Organization. I mean, all of these awful things that we've been the worst in the world at dealing with this virus because of failed governmental leadership. And now we're peddling backwards. And, you know, we haven't even discussed what happened in Texas last week and regulations and people getting $50,000, you know, electric bills. I mean, I have Bill Cole on all the time talking about solar and talking about the future and these fossil fuels. And then there's just deregulation and the government getting out of the way and allowing the people to be screwed by rich energy organizations in Texas. It's appalling.
Well, it's interesting, Nestor. I tell folks this is in Baltimore Positive. We hope folks can tell we prepare quite a bit for Baltimore Positive. We do quite a bit of research before we have our guest on rather than just jump in and try to make stuff up. But on this segment, we decided early on we wanted it to be totally ad lib and we would come on and not really prepare with one another and not talk about topics. You just mentioned Texas and the deregulation, and I will get to the mishandling of the virus. But I had the same thought over the weekend. I thought, man, we've got to get somebody on from the energy sector. And one of you probably ran across him in your life as well, but one of my good buddies for many, many years when he was up here as vice president of BGE, Rob Gould, headed to Florida as vice president for Florida Power and Light. He's now working out there in energy consulting. And I spoke to Rob over the weekend. He's going to join us in the near future on Baltimore Positive to educate us about regulation and what it means and retrofitting and the role of green energy. So that's coming up.
Well, here's where is government meant to protect people here? I mean, isn't that why we set this thing up? The idea was government was going to be here to delineate between a real shot and a fake shot, between charlatans and law and order and lawlessness and screwing the people, you know, systematically using money, power, wealth, and influence to oppress people. And watching the Texas thing last week, it was sort of bone-rattling for me to see the result of the abdication of good government.
Well, you know, Nestor,
I didn't need Ted Cruz on a plane to Cancun to see that, right?
Well,
to see that guy, how does that guy get elected?
There are so many. Well, there's the great question, Nestor. And I would say to folks, if you're writing Ted Cruz off right now, be very careful about that. The guy is a survivor and people have short memories. And, the more I think about it, Nestor, one of the things that I think we need to do a deeper dive into, I want to write more about it, is this whole idea of populism. Our good buddy Tom Cole at Elevate Maryland, he certainly has written and opined on the dangers of populism. And I think you see it. It sounds great, but I think you see it partially in what's played out in Texas. It sounds great to run around and scream against deregulation and don't tell me as an energy company what precautions I have to take and don't tell me I have to have wind turbines that have the ability to be winterized and de-iced. You don't know, and the people don't want you messing in our business. Well, guess what? We both have friends that live in Texas. You know, I spoke to a
and guess who's going to wind up paying for that? us.
Us, all of
Joe
us.
Joe Biden has to send the federal government in there because they can't run their state.
You know, I spoke to our pal, Stuart Berger, over the weekend, who now lives down in Houston. I mean, it was a mess. I mean, his pipes had burst. They had no food. They had, no. The thing is, as most people have read about, their power came back on, but their water was gone. They had no water. So, again, Nestor.
I've never had to live a week like that other than in Venezuela.
Well, it's interesting. We've had a couple of those in Baltimore County during my tenure. You know, we've had derechos, hurricanes, blizzards. And one of the things, again, you realize at those times, I can remember very, very clearly, I think it was during the derecho, that we opened up fire stations almost immediately to folks and told them to bring their containers, bring their coolers, bring their containers, and we would have the fire stations fill them up with potable water. Government has to be able to make a difference, but government also has the idea, and it's here we go again, right? Because I can almost write Donald Trump's speech as he gets ready to journey to CPAC. You know, his aide Jason Miller is already out there saying Donald Trump is the Republican Party. They've got $75 million in their Saving America pack that they're going to spend to really see if they can't invoke amnesia on people. Because, again, what we
forget. A year ago this week, he said 10 people had it. We just crossed 500,000 deaths. What's the figure out here?
Yeah, we're over 500,000. We're probably heading to 600,000, and he is going to try to make us forget that. It's so interesting when you listen now to the right wing echo chamber. This revisionist history is already starting. I mean, the irrational attacks, as I would call them, on the Biden administration, the attempts by Governor Abbott to at first blame green energy and the Green New Deal for the failure in Texas before people, at least most thinking people, called BS on that and said, what in the world are you talking about?
You know,
about?
When your first instinct is to lie, you know, I struggle with that. I struggle with that in every walk of life. I've always struggled with that. People ask me, you know, my Republican friends, what do you got against well, I'm looking at the character of the leaders, and I'm looking at whether they're honest with me and themselves. The intellectual dishonesty at the heart of all of this. You know, Ted Cruz is going to fly to Cancun, then he's going to back up, then he's going to blame it on his kid. And then the truth comes out, and he stands there looking like a moron, and yet people voted for him, and they're going to continue to vote for him.
Oh, they're going to
continue.
I don't
know what else. I get rid of liars in my life. I fire them. I divorce them. I stop working with them. I certainly don't talk about their products, in my programming. I don't like liars. I don't like dishonesty. And I certainly, the gaslighting thing is so new to me, right? Because, like, in Dundalk, I guess in the 70s, I had people that tried to gaslight me, and I said, well, you got to get out of my life. If you're going to sit there and tell me wrestling's real, as an example, just, you know, what happens when Santa Claus is real, you know, these things that still continue when you're 13, 15, or 17, you start to scratch your head. When you're 53 and you're watching a government being run by a guy who creeped off to Mexico in the middle of a freeze as a state senator, and by the way, the biggest crime wasn't that. The biggest crime was voting against democracy 5 days earlier. So sure. We get caught up in what the visual crime is versus what really is happening here in this country. And I don't know. It dismays me on a Monday from a leadership standpoint to think that Texas would choose this again after that.
Well, remember that – champion of democracy, Lindsey Graham, once said, famously quoted, that if someone walked onto the Senate floor and murdered Ted Cruz, you wouldn't have one witness. I mean, what's coming home to roost here short term is the fact that Ted Cruz has no confidants. He has no friends. He has no one in his corner who's going to come forward. Now, having said that, he comes back from Texas after lying about the trip, clearly lying. He was only going to go drop his kids off. Well, that's kind of weird because he invited his college roommate to join them for the weekend. I guess he was going to leave his roommate down there with the kids.
Lying Ted.
Who knows? Lying Ted, right? It was one of the things that maybe Trump had, right? But then he comes back and he's handing out water and he's wearing a shirt that says hashtag Texas Strong. And they'll try to make it about some, you know, weird boogeyman. It's the left.
I can't imagine Ben Cardin getting up and flying off to Jamaica in the middle.
No.
Like, I just
Ben Cardin, Chris Holland, Chris Van Hollen.
And then still getting elected. I can't imagine Larry Hogan could survive that here. He could not survive that.
They do not do that. You know, Nestor, one of the worst feelings I ever had in public life was during the Freddie Gray riots, and Linda and I had planned a trip for, you know, 2 years. I think we were in Paris at the time, and
eating well, no doubt.
I woke up one morning and checked my phone. You know, supposedly try to stay away when you're on vacation to get a little rest and get away from it. And I see that Baltimore is burning and there's tension throughout the counties. And my first thought was, there's nothing I can do. I feel horrible. I'm thousands of miles away, but a sense that I was letting the county down by not being there to help and to help my boss at the time, Kevin Kamenetz, navigate through this. That was something that was uncontrollable. And I felt horrible. The thought that had the riots started, and I would have said to Linda, you know, it's a little messy out here now. There's a lot going on. Let's just get away for a few days. That doesn't even compute. But unfortunately,
that's not leadership.
It's not leadership. And again, it's not the way most people react. I think, you know, we'll see what price Ted Cruz pays, if any. I mean, it's pretty discouraging. I mean, I saw some data this week that, you know, OAN and Newsmax are really on the rise among the Trump base. I mean, they were non-entities, you know, a year or so ago. And now I think it's 17% of Trump voters mention Newsmax as their most trusted source of information. 9% mention OAN. So
down to who you trust, right?
More than a quarter of the Trump voter now trusts OAN or Newsmax as a trusted news source. And we know they're not in any way a news source. And 79% of Trump voters still believe the election was stolen. And I fully expect, Nestor, I expect the former president, try not to use his name, number 45, I expect him to ramp that up, the former guy.
Well, here's where I would put
him to ramp it up at CPAC, right?
I got sideways with a lifer friend of mine a couple of weeks ago who's got several children. And I found some old pictures and I delivered them. And with a mask on, right? And this is a lifelong friend of mine who has become right-leaning in the last 20 years. And really, from an ideological standpoint or a financial standpoint or a religious standpoint, I don't understand it. I really don't. But nonetheless, you know, pleasantries were exchanged, but about 5-10 minutes into it, it came back to this issue. And I haven't seen this person in a while. Not sure I'm going to be seeing this person again anytime soon. It started with Biden senile, he stole the election, right? So you can frame that from your Facebook page with people that you still somehow remain friends with, that I would not allow that because it's not true. So, but the notion that they're telling their children that the election was stolen, I said to this person, I said, you have 3-4 children, young boy, like, you're in your home telling a 10, a 12, that the election was stolen. Don, I don't know how we get out from underneath it.
That's the issue
that I have is when you're telling your children this, it's like the Santa Claus thing, right? Like, I don't know how we're going to undo this in the coming 5-10 years in regard to all of the big lie, as Biden calls it. All of it was a lie. It wasn't one lie. It was a nefarious individual who has mental health issues, quite frankly, lying, gaslighting, Russian disinformation all day, every day for 4 years. We're really upside down on how we discuss this, because my first thought was, you're telling your children this. And I'm like, wow.
How did he react, Nestor? I hadn't heard that story. How did your friend react when you asked him about how he felt telling his children that an election had been
stolen? You know, this person was indignant because they're convinced the election was stolen based on nothing. You know, evidence. Look, we've seen two trials now with the senators of this country, the elected officials, Josh Hawley, right? And these people go in and say, evidence, we don't do evidence in the United States. We don't do evidence in the Senate. We don't want any evidence. Witnesses, oh my God, no witnesses. We're not going to have any witnesses. Watching this play out over the last year and a half, it's been very disconcerting to me, but it's more disconcerting when I do spend time with people that I love, that I like, that I've had a lifetime of interaction with, who aren't basing anything on evidence or on facts and are watching these. I hate it when you bring up the names of those fake news agencies. They're a mess to me. I mean, I've spent my whole life trying to be honest with people into this mic, into this camera. I have very little time for intellectual dishonesty.
It's interesting. I saw one of the right wing websites right before we came on. The headline was,
"See, I don't see any of that."
The
it's like seeing professional wrestling. I just don't see it.
I read them to try to see what you know a portion of the country are thinking. And the headline was, first month of Biden presidency, total disaster. And I chuckled because I thought he's got approval ratings in the mid-60s. The disapproval ratings are in the low 30s. Now, that will change. We've talked about that. It'll change just naturally. But I thought by any measure...
People in Texas are blaming him.
By any measure. Right, exactly. I mean, it's silly stuff to the point where... And it was represented, I thought, by the right's reaction, because they don't know what to do with the 31-year-old congresswoman from Brooklyn, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. Because when she goes out and does something like, and as we go on the air today, I think she and Beto have raised over $5 million for relief efforts in Texas, they immediately turn on the attack jets and accuse her of having some whole political ulterior motive, that she's an awful person. And I said to a couple over the weekend, I said, I'm not following. Even if, let's assume for a minute that somehow she thought helping Texans was a good thing for her in Brooklyn, I said, I'm still not sure why raising $5 million to help people in the midst of a humanitarian crisis is not a good thing. But they have AOC on the brain, and the fact that she's able to connect and raise that kind of money makes them absolutely crazy. So there is a lot going on out there. Hey, real quick, I know we try to stick to a half an hour in the recon, as we call it. Couple quick things, pop culture and sports. How about the Terps? I got to tell you, Nestor, I have not been. You got to get, when you talk to our good buddy David Thurston, I know he'll say to me, "I told you so." And our friend John Feinstein called us out, not us, but folks like me anyway. Yesterday on Twitter, I have been critical of Mark Turgeon over the years and not been sure he was the right guy. I've got to tell you, with this collection that he's got on the floor this year, he should go to the Hall of Fame, get 200 hours, whatever it is, because what a coaching job. Turgeon has done to have this team even in the discussion for getting to the dance.
It's been such a fractured year, right? Like when they're playing, how they're playing, home and homes with Nebraska last week and all that stuff. To me, the whole thing, and I keep bringing up Eddie Fainer, college sports has felt like an exhibition to me. It feels very much like an intramural, like it did at Holabird Middle School. It feels like thrown together to some degree, and they're lucky to be playing. You know, I woke up early Sunday morning and spent some time with Joe Douglas, general manager of the New York Jets. You can find that out at Baltimore Positive as well. And trying to scout football players that played four games, five games, or didn't have a season, and doing all that. At least these basketball players are getting out, dribbling, doing what they're doing. I don't know. I mean, you're much more connected to lacrosse as to how real the lacrosse thing will be for your youngsters or for the collegiate, you know, or high schools at this point. But just getting the games in and playing the games, I feel good for the athletes. For anybody out there that's dedicated their life to this, that this is their senior year of college or freshman year of college, whatever it is, that if you're getting your games in and you're doing it safely, you're probably giving up lots of other things in order to be able to do that, right? From a safety standpoint, I admire what they're doing. I just don't want to watch sports in empty gyms. I just don't.
No, it has a very, very different feel to it. I agree, Nestor. I think we really do appreciate the fans and what they bring to the game. I think it's amazing. I will tell you here, your good friend for many years, Alan McCallum, and I were chatting over the weekend, and we were chuckling about you. Your ears should have been burning. We were trying to decide how somebody who likes all things cultural like you do is not a movie nut. It's a discussion that you and Max Weiss and I have had, right? It's how can Nestor not be a movie guy?
I don't have time.
But I'm going to put one on your list, and Alan and I were chatting. Lynn and I watched a film this weekend. It's getting a lot of buzz, called Nomadland, with Frances McDormand. It only has two actors in it, Frances McDormand and David Strathairn. And it is about a culture in the United States of America of people who literally live in vans and in RVs and don't stay in one place and travel all over the country, and the sense of community that they develop. I'll be shocked if it doesn't win all kinds of Academy Awards.
I need to see the Miami movie.
So One Night in Miami,
yes.
I liked it. Not everybody's cup of tea. You might find it a little slow.
I'm like into like when it snows and you get locked in. I used to watch movies during that period of time. I don't like movies at the theater because people are rude. You know, literally, like I don't like watching movies where I can't stop it now. Like, so I like to be able to stop it and pee and get some popcorn.
Well, I can't wait. Again,
I like
you
to be
and
able
I
to stop
disagree.
It and discuss it, which my wife hates. My wife hates watching movies with
exactly.
me because I like
don't
to talk,
talk
about it.
No, you're right. Jen is right. You don't talk during the movie. I can't wait to run back to the theater. When it's safe, I want
my
popcorn.
You go to the movies, and I'll build my business and do what I do.
There you go. But
I
want
to
go back
to movies was Adam Sandler. I my kid took me to a couple of Adam Sandler movies. They were so god awful that I needed to walk
out. Wait
a minute.
Wait a minute. Now 25th anniversary
of what?
Gilmore, come on, shooter.
Happy
25th
God.
Anniversary of Happy Gilmore.
You know what the worst thing about that movie is? You've watched it not only once, you've watched it a dozen times.
Oh,
I haven't wasted
probably,
time once with it.
Probably 20 times, shooter. Come on. Happy Gilmore.
How do you find time to like do anything else? Like
I don't know,
like,
man.
Like,
I fit in and watch them late at
do
night.
Do you have a different
watch
day than I do? Do you have 30 hours in a day where they give you 6 extra hours to do this?
Watch them early Sunday, you know, but I do. I can't wait to return to the movies. One thing you will love about One Night in Miami. Again, I said I liked it. Not everybody does, but you will love it reintroduces you to Sam Cooke. And I have been on a Sam Cooke run since I saw One Night in Miami.
Okay.
Just realizing again what an incredible.
I'm upset talent. That you mentioned Sam Cooke to me because I don't know anything about that movie and I want to watch it and I don't want to know anything.
Well,
I don't know anything about it. It's just
there you go.
It's been recommended by enough people that if I had to watch one movie tonight, that's the one I would watch. But what I was going to tell you is I have this huge list of movies that I've never seen, and it's become a genre that I haven't seen the Elton John movie. I haven't seen the Queen movie. I haven't seen the Ray Charles movie. I haven't seen the Ali movie. So like those biopics is what they're called, right? That's the right word?
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Yes, yes.
Nice. A Siskel and Ebert word. Biopics. I'm saving those. I think those are going to be the ones that I do sort of in some order.
Well, they're all, you know, very, very good. They're very good films.
You've seen them all.
Oh, seen them all. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Seen them all. And, you know, out of the ones you mentioned there, I think Will Smith's performance as Muhammad Ali is spectacular.
Okay. Ray Charles?
The end, the Live Aid ending. We need Max Weiss on for a movie set. The Live Aid ending to the Queen film is biopic. I mean, in the biopic is spectacular. They basically do it in total. You'll feel as if you're at Live Aid.
I was at Live Aid.
Elton John's film I found touching and kind of sad. So yeah, they all bring something to the table. But we love at least 50% of the Baltimore positive team.
You know how much I
movies.
Love the band Rush, Don.
I do.
Still have not seen the last Rush documentary. That's how backed up I am on cinema around here. So I did catch up, and you'll laugh, but I watched a wrestling. Remember the Fabulous Moolah? Do you remember the Fabulous
sure,
Moolah?
Sure, sure.
There's a Dark Side of the Ring series that I think Vice did with a dozen different pieces. I'm not going to watch them all. I was just going to watch a couple of the ones that I was interested in. So every once in a while, I like hour-long doc. You know what I want to watch? The Jimmy Carter rock and roll thing on CNN. That's on my list of things to watch.
Well, in terms of those kind of films, and we'll get out of here and let people get on with their day. But in terms of those kind of films, you know, I think I would move to the top of your list. I'd move the Linda Ronstadt documentary, which
okay.
I think it's absolutely spectacular.
See, that's what I want.
I had no idea what a musical genius she was. When We're Brothers, which is the story, the Robbie Robertson story of the band, absolutely incredible. Particularly the concert itself at the end, when your boy, the Boss, is one of a group that comes out and performs with the band. The Bee Gees documentary, spectacular.
So fantastic. Yeah. Highly recommend that.
Well, and When We're Brothers.
See, I don't
good,
watch anything. I just don't watch movies.
Well, you would love the Linda
I don't live
Ronstadt.
In fantasy land with Adam Sandler on some stupid golf course. For
25 years, shooter. And on that take,
it's dumb then. It's dumb now.
25 years, shooter. Come on.
Don Moeller, he used to run Baltimore County, as amazing as that is, for a long, long time. He'll be joining us this week. Make sure you're getting out to the Baltimore Positive repository to check out, which I thought the conversation with Dr. Branch was unbelievable for explaining how a virus works. We had a great conversation with John Feinstein as well. You can go check that out. All of our Baltimore Positive work, Tom Linthicum. We're getting together with some more Baltimore County executives in the coming weeks and other folks. We are WNST.net, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking pop culture, politics, and getting through this pandemic together.